Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's ka'chava, ka'chava.com, code FITNESS.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee, co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, longtime entertainment reporter, and you're a pretty popular guy, right? How many popularity contests have you won in your life?
I have won some, but then I've been beaten by people, and I'm just livid when that happens.
Yeah.
But we do a in Sioux City, we do a reader's choice kind of thing. And I have one best celebrity. How do you like that one?
Ooh.
Before, and then gotten beaten by TV people, which is like, oh no, stick a knife in me and twist it, right? But those days are past, and I don't need that anymore. But at the time, it is very important. So popularity contest, isn't that all? If you think of the musical Wicked,
yeah,
she sings popular, and she says that's what politics is. It isn't that you're better; it's that you're popular.
Right.
And now there's a movie, a TV movie that addresses popularity in high schools. Now, haven't we seen this like a million times?
Right.
But this script was one of those ones every year they publish a list of the best unmade movies. And this was one of the ones that made that list. And finally, somebody said, let's throw some money at it. Let's do it. And it is a very kind of telling, interesting check of all of that, if you will. It isn't what you think. It's about 2 candidates for student council or student government in a high school.
Okay.
And these 2 kids that are kind of, you know, snarky, and the boy is kind of a rebel, and the girl's kind of like, she thinks she knows everything. And they square off with their candidates and decide that they are going to beat each other. And it's a battle for them. It has nothing to, I don't think we care that much about the ones who are actually running. But these 2, like, they're campaign managers is what they amount to be.
Right.
They just square off and really hate each other. The show is called How to Lose a Popularity Contest. And it stars Chase Hudson, or as you might know him, Huddy, and Sarah Weissglass. And Chase is one of those influencers / musicians. He's one of those kids who decided to just throw stuff out on TikTok, and he started getting an audience, and he grew to 30 million followers.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That's a lot.
I don't know what that would be like. I said to him, I said, well, now what do I have to do to be an influencer? And he said that he would follow me, and Sarah said she would follow me too. So I've got 2. But it boggles the mind. And with him, and you'll hear this in this interview, because I want you to understand what's going on here. He was one of those kids who felt like he was an outcast in school, where kids weren't, you know, they didn't want to engage with him. He tried to make friends. They didn't want to be friends with him. And he thought, what can I do? And so he just focused on music, focused on his social media, and started getting this following. And for me, I've never seen that as a career move for anybody, because I think it's too iffy.
Mm-hmm.
But for these young people, and they can be very successful. I mean, 30 million, he got record contracts.
Yeah.
He got other kinds of endorsement deals. And what's interesting is that's his path to acting. Now, Sarah's is one where she started as a kid, as a really small child, doing commercials and whatnot, and then started getting TV work and movies. And she was in a couple of Degrassi series, if you remember Degrassi High. And okay. Now she's in a series called Ginny and Georgia on Netflix. And so she's taken a more traditional route to all of this, but she doesn't badmouth the idea of using social media as a way to get there, even though in Hollywood, it's a big controversy that somehow you need to have so many followers before they'll even look at you for an audition. So, you know, it sees what happened. But the young boy does a great job of acting in this. And it's called How to Lose a Popularity Contest. Chase and Sarah are the two. Here's my talk with them. I think you might enjoy it. What were you two like in high school?
Right out of the gate.
Right out the gate. I'll let you take this one first.
I was very artistic. I really loved film. I loved working with other people. I loved teamwork. Kind of steered clear of sports just because I wasn't always at school. I was usually working, so I wasn't there that much. But when I was there, I just really loved learning about all the different arts and being funny. That's what I was in high school.
I was different year by year. Like freshman year, I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to have a laugh with everybody. And I really put myself out there freshman year. But I was also pursuing the arts and social media all at the same time. And I really got into it heavy and started to gain popularity in sophomore year, more so online and less at school. People actually really kind of turned on me at school and thought I was a little bit of a loser. So I felt like more of an outcast. And I just started listening to music, and that really just like changed my life. Also made me depressed. But I headphones in, like hoodie up, and I would just kind of sleep and listen to music in sophomore year. And it led to me moving to online school and just kind of like pursuing my dreams. And I was so much happier then. But like freshman to sophomore days, two different people.
Well, you know, today we hear a lot of young people who want to be influencers. I mean, that's a career goal for them. But is it a career goal? Can you really say I want to be an influencer or not?
I mean, absolutely. I think you can be whatever you want to be in life.
But doesn't that take a lot of work? Yeah. Wasn't that good?
Of course. I mean.
But everything. Social,
everything can take.
Everything takes a lot of work. Yeah. And everything's hard. But you just got to pick your heart.
Yeah. I mean, you can either take it really seriously. Or like, I mean, there's ways to go about being on social media, or you can just kind of like set your phone up and like figure it out, you know, like it can be low effort or super high effort, but it also depends on how consistent you are and how active you are in your own community.
Yeah, I don't think I could feed the beast as often as I think you need to. And that would be my problem with the whole thing.
I would watch your TikTok, Bruce.
Would you?
Right there, Bruce.
I would.
The old timer.
Got a fan.
Okay, there's one. Wait, I've got one. There are two.
Two.
When you play each other, when you go at each other, how brutal could you be?
What? When we
imitate each other. You know, there's that scene where you.
Oh,
we could get worse.
I don't want to hurt his feelings. Not in real life. I couldn't do that.
No, I mean, are we talking about real life or in like the character and how deep we can go there?
I think he was like,
like us in real life. Oh, we can imitate each other for sure. Yeah, we can picture.
So you can be brutal. It's all right.
Oh yeah, we don't take each other seriously in the slightest.
Yeah. What?
I looked at it and thought, wow, they're going there. But what the heck? Did they name her Max because of your relationship with the other show?
I don't think so.
No.
However, funnily enough, the first three seasons of Ginny and Georgia, when I was on set, I called her Maxi Pad. Like, I'd be like, returning a good old Maxi Pad, which is where the Max nickname comes. So it really does feel full circle a little bit.
Okay, so where can they take this? Can it go to a second film? Can we see more of them? Because
We hope so.
Oh, it can go 2, 3,
we
4.
We talked about it so much because we loved, loved, loved making it and loved the people we worked with. Aiden, Lillian, Janelle, like everyone. It was just so much fun. And so we constantly were going up to the producers and being like,
make a second one.
Can you make a second one? And when?
So ready right now.
Well, Chase, how is it then being an actor? I mean, she studied acting. You kind of became an actor. How difficult is that? Is it tough work?
Of course. I think if you're stepping into this lane, you have to take it very seriously. And given that they gave me a proper amount of time to really understand my character and like practice these lines, I had a like proper amount of time to really prepare for this role. And I took it very seriously. And I knew what was at stake. And I wanted to make sure that I killed it, not just for myself, but for everyone involved in the movie and for the fans out there watching. And it's like, hey, don't screw this up for everybody else, you know? So I made sure that I took it as serious as I could.
Well, congratulations. You did a good job. I'm counting on you two now being my followers, because I'll be an influencer.
I love that for you, Bruce.
I'm right there. I'm watching everything.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS.
It's tax time, y'all. If you want to file free, this next one's for you.
Now taxes is so free.
That jam. Up next, commercials.
Intuit TurboTax Free Edition. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, student loan interest, and Schedule 1A.
Thanks, Bruce, for that interview. You know, these popularity type of movies, I mean, this is, as you said, there's just a long line of these in cinema the last, you know, 30, 40 years or so. I mean, you look back, films like Napoleon Dynamite,
right.
You know, like Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick Dempsey. And then you have, you know, like just a long line of them, of those John Hughes films, like, you know, Weird Science, The Breakfast
All the
Club.
80s, yeah.
And yeah, Pretty in Pink, some Kind of Wonderful. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a trope that really works no matter what the generation, because there's a different group of people who are feeling those feelings.
Right.
But now we look into the future. Let's go to the year 3000 and see what those kids are like. Well, of course, Star Trek, leaving no galaxy unturned, has created a new series called Star Trek Starfleet Academy. And this is a look at the school where they're training them to be, you know, Starfleet people. So it's a high school-ish kind of approach to Star Trek. Holly Hunter plays the chancellor of the school, and so she's kind of riding herd on all these kids. And then then we had Paul Giamatti as a pirate, a space pirate, who checks in and every now and then. But they've got Robert Picardo. If you remember him, he was in, I think, Star Trek Voyager. He's been in several Star Trek iterations as the AI version, or a hologram, I think in some of those years it was called, of a doctor. And so he's the medical personnel there. But in this one, he's older looking. And they say, well, that's just because it was upgrades on the computer. And that's, it makes them look older so they don't feel like they're out of it.
Yeah.
They also talk about him swearing for the first time. And, you know, he said there were a lot of people who were very upset when they heard that the doctor was going to swear. And he said, well, you have to keep pace with the young people. And if they do call him on it and say he's swearing, he says, I didn't say that. And it just kind of disappears. But you will hear profanity in this new one. And you'll see different kinds of characters you've never seen before. Okay. The set looks really gorgeous. It's big. But Holly Hunter is an interesting choice because she can be commanding, but it's very much like broadcast news, where she's kind of barking orders. And then she becomes very kind of bohemian and hippie in other areas. And you go, huh, interesting. But yeah, so that's new this week. It starts. And I think it'll do well. It's, you know, they're looking for another market that they're trying to mine. And I think if they do get the young people in and they start watching through this, they will maybe want to check out all the other ones.
Yeah. Star Trek is such a fascinating franchise to me. Are you a Trekkie or a Trekker?
I am not.
You are not. Yeah. No. You know, it's one of those franchises, like, I watched a lot of the original series on reruns, you know, in the early 80s. I've seen all the movies, you know, so like every Star Trek movie from the motion picture when they reunited the original cast, including the ones where they kind of brought in the Next Generation cast. I've seen all of them. I saw the reboots that were done. You know, as far as the TV series go, like, I don't know. You know, there's been a lot of them. I've seen a lot of episodes of the Next Generation, but I never watched every single one. I've seen episodes of Deep Space Nine, but I didn't watch every one. I watched a little bit of Voyager here and there. It's really, I know for some people that are really into the series, into the franchise, they're diehards. They're going to watch everything and eat it up. But I start to wonder with this, like, is there too much? Like, you know, at some point, can you do too many things? Or is this just something where, you know, every few years you do another show, you get 2 to 4 seasons out of it, maybe 5, and then move on, take a little break, and then come up with something? But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this one does, how it resonates with fans, and whether or not they accept it or reject it.
Yeah, I think they're playing to a different audience, which is one new thing. But compared to Star Wars, where Star Wars was kind of a, if you will, this is my take on it. I'm not a Trekker or a Star Wars person. But I think Star Trek is a more hopeful world where things are kind of brighter and glossier, and it's possible, but they get, you know, traumas that come in their way. Whereas we're kind of under the realm of Darth Vader, and kind of everything seems gloomy in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the difference between the two, but both of them are trying to mind the horse a little too much. Look at how many things we've seen with Star Wars where you think, well, they didn't need to do that one. And maybe that's with this too. Maybe they don't need to do that, but they usually try to keep something fresh going with Star Trek at all times. I think it's like a factory. We've got to come up with something now to make sure that we keep it going, or else we're out of luck.
Yeah, and I do think, and this is kind of, I think, where the franchise is with Star Wars also. As the actors age for all of these different franchises, you know, so you take like Star Wars, where it's kind of sputtered back and forth, where, you know, it's done well with certain things like The Mandalorian. Some of the other series haven't resonated as well, but they seem to be heading into a direction where they're needing to kind of, I guess, move away from the original cast, and for good reason. You know, like Carrie Fisher has died. You know, Mark Hamill's getting up there in age. I mean, he's still working, and there's been some times where they've brought him back for the voice and they've de-aged him,
right,
using, you know, CGI and AI and stuff to make him look younger, but he's still participating. But you know, you look at it, it's really kind of the same thing with Star Trek, where, you know, like William Shatner's still alive, but most of the original cast has passed away at this point.
Yeah.
And even the Next Generation cast, they're all getting a lot older. And, you know, can you keep bringing them back? And so in this case, they've spun the series forward 1,000 years or whatever it is, because at least there you can kind of break away from
right,
the original and kind of some, you know, establish something new. But when you do that, you do run the danger of like this disconnection from what made you successful to begin with. So it's a really delicate balance you've got to play, where you have to cater to the original fans, the ones that have been there forever. But at the same time, you still need to grow audience, retain audience, and have to account for the fact that you just can't, you know, like even if William Shatner wanted to participate in something new, I mean, you know, he's like 90-ish years old, right?
Right.
You know, you just
get one good show out of him and that's it.
Yeah, you just, you know, there's only so much you can do. You know, you can only keep on bringing back, you know, the Picard character so many times at this point, because actors are getting older.
This is like a lot of young people in this. And when they brought Will Wheaton on to Next Generation, it was an uproar. It was like, oh, why does this kid get to be on this show?
Right.
And they weren't friendly to him. Well, I think by having more kids, they really have, they can't pull that. And you get mixes of Klingon and this or Klingon and that. So it's not just the same species. I don't know what
right,
you'd even call that. Where they're mixing these character aliens from different areas.
Right.
But it's fun to see because it's somebody's idea. They dreamed it up and you go, yeah, but yet you still get kind of the format where they're in the captain's chair, which by the way, the captain's chair looks kind of comfortable. I think I have sat in most of the captain's chairs.
Yeah.
Over the years, and they're usually hard.
Oh,
and they're
sure.
Not all that, yeah, they're not that. And those little kind of like if they have a bunch of buttons on the armrest, they don't do anything. But it looks cool if you're sitting there, and it's great for a picture. I have a
yeah,
lot of great pictures of me in Star Trek chairs.
Mm.
But sitting there, forget it. And most of the things that the staff is working on, you know, where they're he's the flight attendant or flight director or whatever it might be, they're just pressing glass because it's just lighting that lights up. So it's different. And, but that look is still there. And I think maybe that's what is the universal part of it, is all of these starships look alike.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the people
yeah,
in them are change.
I know. And I've kind of, and this is part of the problem where streaming has really changed things and, you know, reruns and how that, is there was a point in time a few years ago where I had started rewatching some of the older Star Trek series. Like I wanted to watch like as many of the Star Trek Next Generation that I could. And they had every series was on Netflix. But now all those shows have come off of Netflix because they're behind, you know, Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Paramount, of course, wants to take advantage.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they want their IP here. So, you know, so then it's like, well, do I want to subscribe to Paramount Plus to watch another thing? Or is this, you know, do I need to put it on rotation? I don't know. Like, you know, I'm kind of curious. There's been a bunch of shows in recent years on Paramount where I've gone like, yeah, I wouldn't mind watching this one. But do I really want to subscribe to something else just to, you know, catch a few episodes here or there? So it's a gamble, too. You know, you keep on rolling these things out, hoping to attract viewers to your standalone platform, but you know, will they come? You know, is the built-in audience enough to keep them coming?
The problem with a lot of that is that you're at the mercy of the one who owns the rights to the
right,
the material. And so if they decide, you know, we're pulling this because we don't want it to get any attention or we want to launch it again, you can't see it whenever. So maybe
right.
that we were right to buy the DVDs when they were available, because then you're the master of that ship.
Right. You know, and this is a fascinating, it's not just the movies, but it's music. It's so many different things right now where people are starting to reconnect with physical media because it's that lack of ownership. You know, I was thinking, like, you know, and you know, I'm a record collector, and I so in my collection, I've got, you know, I don't know, 2000 to 2500 records, somewhere in that range. I also have, you know, somewhere in the range of 2000 to 2500 CDs. It's a lot. My wife is like, you know, why do you still have those CDs? Why don't you get rid of them? You just stream and stuff. And I'm like,
no.
Well, yeah, but what happens when they go away? And there's so many things that I either have on record, you know, on vinyl or on a CD, which it's just not available to stream. You know, Neil Young got annoyed with Amazon, and he pulled all of his music off of streaming.
Right.
So, like, if I want to listen to Neil Young, like, I, you know, I either have to switch because I use Amazon Music. So I either have to dump Amazon Music and then find a platform that he's on. I'm not even sure if he's on Spotify right now, or I have to listen to my CDs or records. And I, you know, we're kind of changing direction now where, like, it's kind of annoying if I, you know, if you purchase something like digital tracks, or you bought a digital movie, and then all of a sudden that platform pulls it because they lost the rights to it.
Not
it's
good.
Vanished. You don't own it anymore. You do not like, you can, people think like, hey, I'm going to purchase the digital copy of this movie. I'm going to purchase the digital tracks from this album.
I'll have it forever.
You will have it forever. And you don't, you do not own it. You are, it's a long-term lease, and it's there for as long as it's there. And as soon as they pull it, it's gone and you don't own it anymore.
And we thought, as they improve the quality of the recording or whatever, that the old ones would look bad, or the old
right.
ones would sound bad. And so we need the latest technology so we get
right.
the best. And look what happened. Now everybody's going back to vinyl.
Yeah, right.
We want the old stuff.
Yeah.
We don't. So I am a big proponent of purchasing the stuff if you want it. And
yep.
I do buy the movies that I want to keep each year, so that mm-hmm. I make sure that I don't lose it somehow in the process, and
yeah.
I can watch them whenever, you know.
Right. I still have a ton of movies on DVD. I don't buy movies. Do you know what I buy on DVD or Blu-ray? I buy the James Bond movies. Like, so anytime a James Bond movie comes out,
sure.
I buy that. That's all I buy. Like, I in the last 5 or 6 years, the only movies I've purchased a physical copy of are the James Bond movies, because I don't want to lose access to them.
Or Disney movies.
That's a good one, too. I don't purchase those, but
that's
absolutely, there's a huge...
A lot of
people
will get to
yep.
then. Yeah, they plug it in if the grandkids are there, and
yeah.
they say, well, let's show them this, and we're good.
And
but,
we were still buying those while the kids were younger. You know, they've gotten older, and we have Disney Plus now, and... You know, Disney Plus isn't really going anywhere, I don't think. So,
right.
So we'll have it. But, you know, and that's honestly the only reason I don't purchase Star Wars movies anymore. Because, again, you know, it's on Disney Plus. And, it, you know, if Disney decides to sell the IP of Star Wars, then I might rethink that. But it's, yeah, I mean, you know, it's,
well,
those are
can
the
I
things
give you
we
some
think
good
about.
News?
Yes.
At the Disney parks in Florida, they're expanding the Star Wars area. So
nice.
There's going to be more rides, more walking around. God knows what planet you're on. Hoth, here we are.
Florida could use a Hoth.
Would that be good?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think as long as we have somebody like that owns it, and wouldn't you think that Star Trek would be something they would want to own? Maybe.
You would think, yeah, one of these, you know, somebody.
It could be a theme park area. You'd love to walk through that and
yeah.
trouble with tribbles. And then you go in a room and a bunch of tribbles
beam me up.
Attack you.
Yep. Beam me up, Scotty.
But, you know, I mentioned the theme parks. That brings up to mind a new documentary that is just incredible.
Oh,
it's
that's right.
It's called Disneyland Handcrafted. And it premieres this month. It was a documentary produced by Leslie Iwerks. Her relative, Ub Iwerks, was actually the person credited with creating Mickey Mouse. He, you know, came up with the drawings and all that. And so in the history of the Disney company, Walt didn't necessarily create Mickey Mouse because he had these other people to help. But Leslie does this thing on the creation of Disneyland. And it's remarkable because she was given access to all the archives at the Disney studios. And it shows how they went about just clearing the orange fields. And they said it was so far away, nobody would come to it. They thought this was like just the worst thing. We're going near Anaheim. Who wants to come there to see this thing? And they weren't sure what it was going to be like because Coney Island was kind of the standard for everybody to compare with. And Walt didn't want Coney Island. Walt wanted something a little better. And when he started talking about attractions or rides or whatever, he didn't want the regular things that you would see at every place. It wasn't just a Ferris wheel. It wasn't just, you know, he wanted things that were a little more unique to what he was building. And he would throw out these ideas, and then he'd tell his people who worked at the studio, I need to know what this looks like by Sunday. And they would do it.
Wow.
And you see in this documentary how they went about even just carving and hand painting the ride vehicles. And it's just, it's fascinating how much workmanship went into Disneyland at a time when people didn't know what Disneyland was.
Yeah.
And he set a deadline. He said, we're going to do it. It's going to open in July of 1955. And they said, well, that's impossible, Walt, because we only have like a year to get this done. He said, I don't know. We're going to just do it. And everybody told him he was crazy. But he heard that so many times with everything he did that he just kind of blew it off. And they got close to that July opening date. They were not ready at all for Disneyland to open. And they thought, let's push it to September. We could make it by September. And this one guy in the documentary says, there's no way we wouldn't have made it in September. So it was good that we stuck with July because it forced us to work 12-hour days or more just to get the things done. And they got to the last week and they came to Walt and they were scared to say this, but they said, Walt, you have to make a choice. Do you want water fountains or do you want restrooms? And he said, well, they're not going to pee in the streets. They've got Coke and Pepsi they can buy. Let's go with the restrooms. That's what we need to have done first. So, and when it opened, they didn't have water fountains there. And if you remember a time when we didn't have bottled water or any of those things available to us, that was a crisis. That was like, wait a minute here. And people did complain about those things, but they had to just, you know, cut bait. It was time to get going with Disneyland, and it opened, and it was to this day the template for those kind of theme parks. You see Universal opening up their theme parks, and they're remarkable, but it wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been a Disneyland.
Yeah.
And so this Disneyland Handcrafted, which you'll find on Disney Plus, and it is showing in theaters. I'm assuming that's because they want to enter it as a
documentary Oscar
the next
year.
And it's in time with the 70th anniversary of, but it's very well made. There's so much footage there that you have never seen. So if you're like a hardcore Disney person, you're going to go, I never knew this existed. And it's remarkable how you see them chipping away at this stuff. And, you know, so many are smoking while they're on the job site. And you're going, wait a minute, that was another time because they were allowed to do those things and dressed up. These workers are wearing like what I would consider dress pants while they're building on a ship or whatever it might be. And then they had a problem with the waters of America, you know, where they have the steamboat and the Columbia. Every day they would fill the water and they'd come back and it was gone. And they thought, what happened to this water? Well, it was just soaking in because the sand or the ground that they had was very sandy. And so they had to try and figure out a way to preserve it, like making a swimming pool, basically, that would hold the water so they could put the vehicles in it. But yeah, it's remarkable. And if you have any interest in the Disney parks, you will love to see how they did this. The main street, when they show you how they make the buildings, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I was not clued in at all as to how this was done because I thought I knew it all. And it's not the same. And so the idea that she got all of this material to turn into a documentary is really a tribute. And I think it says a lot. And it talks about the whole concept of dreaming. And, you know, if you dream big enough and you keep at it, you can make that dream come true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Disney, Walt Disney is such a fascinating figure, innovator. I mean, he obviously was a flawed human being, as many of us are at times, and controversial
what?
At times. But
what? Harry? No.
Right. But all that aside, you know, everything that he did as an entertainer, whether it was filmmaking, animation, through just the innovation of the theme park, like, you know, how differently things would be had there never been a Walt Disney. You know, you think about those things, like how would the world be different, right? You know, if just that one person didn't exist, you know, things would have happened. There probably would have at some point been a place for roller coasters, but it just changes the whole trajectory of like, you know, humanity in a sense, like, you know, how we approach vacations and what we do.
Look at some of those rides. Pirates of the Caribbean, it was an original concept for the parks, and then they spun it into films.
Yeah.
Haunted Mansion, another one. That didn't succeed as well in films, but they were creating storytelling in a theme park, and that has always been a Disney byproduct. What's the story? Even when you're just riding on a roller coaster, there has to be a story to it. And so that's fun to see. But they were dreaming up things that they didn't know what they did. How do you make this? We don't know. There's no book. They didn't have YouTube videos to look at to figure out how to make this. They were coming up with it on the fly. And I think a lot of it was because they were doing sets. They knew how to make sets for movies, but then they didn't realize that those sets are temporary. They'll last for as long as they need for shooting, but this has to be permanent. And they didn't realize that you needed to make things out of concrete or you know, it was, so it lasted. And if there was a big rain or a storm or something, it could survive.
Right.
So it's, you get a chance to see how that all plays out. And it's really remarkable, but please look for it. And I'm not trying to throw you something because I like Disneyland, but, It's a great look at what is possible if people dream big enough and if they put their mind to it. And then there are those people who will follow them and make it happen for them. And I think we need a little more of that creative thinking in Hollywood to come up with some new ideas, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot to think about, a lot to digest. I mean, we've put out a lot for you today too, whether it's you know, the teen movies, whether it's going deep into the future.
You could want to be an influencer and you want to take it where it can go. You could be a Walt Disney who wants to build a theme park, you know.
There you go.
It's remarkable.
I can tell you, as my wife teaches, she teaches 4K right now, and she'll talk to the kids, you know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I can tell you, influencer has started to pop up on even with 5-year-olds. It's pretty crazy.
I sound like that nutty old parent or grandparent who says, that's not a career. You're not going to, we used to hear that. Like when I said, I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
And you go, well, can you teach English? Maybe that's what you should do. Teach English, because then at least you'd have a secure job. And that's what we're looking at with influencers now. It's like, how do you kids do that? And the kids go, well, check my checking account. I got $6 million in the checking.
That's right. Yep.
So what do I know?
So what do we know? And on that note, thanks for listening. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Kachava. getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS.
Taxes was feeling unwelcome. Now Taxes is an open door, literally, to new TurboTax stores. Meet our experts in person.
Hi, welcome in.
They're powered by smart tech and ready to do your taxes for you. Get real-time updates while you go about your day, confident your taxes are done right. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. TurboTax stores opening soon. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app.
It's tax time, y'all. If you want to file free, this next one's for you.
Now Taxes is so free.
That jam. Up next, commercials.
Intuit TurboTax Free Edition. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, student loan interest, and Schedule 1A.